Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Stephen Howson podcast. This is one of the most anticipated podcast that we've done, and this is one of the ones that we haven't done that's live, so there might be more of these coming. One of the most requested guests behind the True Geordie is my grandfather John, so welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, sir.
So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to cover the history of Manchester United. My granddad, his first game was in 1950, which was definitely in black and white, and he's seen 7 decades of Manchester United, so got loads of opinions and loads of stuff, and I've been fortunate enough to grow up listening to some of these stories, and I thought, you know what, I think some of you guys would really enjoy these stories as well. So that is what we're going to do today. We're going to cover all of the questions that you've already given us on Reddit, and we might just go off topic as well, because that's what we do on the podcast, isn't it? So we'll get straight into it in a second. First, before we do that, I want to say thanks to the pig on the wall in Drawsden for allowing us to come and film in here. Get yourself down here, try a pint, try some of the food and all the rest of it. And let's get straight into it. So, why do we support United?
Well, as you know, with the family, we was born into it, really. I had an older brother that was never away from the place. Took me then, 1950, as you just said. Watched Blackpool beat United. But of course, they was the lads then, weren't they, 1950-ish, with Stanley Matthews and Mortensen and the lads. So yeah, we was born into it, really.
On your first game, do you remember anything about it? What was it? It was Blackpool?
Blackpool United. The game, no, not really. I was more looking at the place, because obviously it was my first time. All I could get, obviously, with my brother was watch Jack Rowley. And I don't remember much of the game, really.
Well, I got something for you anyway, because I know that I've spoken about it on the podcast. I've got my programme, I've got my dad's programme, I've got Jaden's. That's yours.
Magic.
So that's... That's the actual programme for my granddad's first game. Found it on eBay for him. You have a look at the team. Check the team out. See if that jogs anything. These names I remember in there, like.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything, yeah.
I don't really remember, but you know what I mean.
Well, I don't know. I can't remember. Balogun.
For everyone here, we've got Carey, we've got Aston, Cockburn, yeah. Names you might have heard. Well, Pearson, Rowley, obviously.
Oh, yeah. It's funny in how it is. Every one of the defence, I remember. Because, mind you, I went for a few years with them still playing. Rowley, obviously, in Pearson. But Bogan, I don't remember. But he's a good... There's a good seven or eight there that I know well.
Stanley Matthews there on the Blackpool team.
The lads, yeah.
We spoke about this the other day, actually, didn't we? That Stanley Matthews was the first Ballon d'Or winner. I think it was 1953.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, he's... Of course, in 53 is when they won the FA Cup with that team that had won the championship and all sorts. And they hadn't won the FA Cup. It was his first, after all them years he'd played, it was his first FA Cup win.
So Stanley Matthews sort of feels like a cliche name to people of my generation, because obviously there's no footage, really. I think there's one of the cup finals, it might be the 53 cup final, actually, of him. What was he like as a player?
Oh, he was unbelievable. He's a... As they say, he used to walk up to people, and the next thing he'd be 5 yards past them and gone, and they had to turn and chase him.
Well, like the way Messi does, that sort of...
Yeah, he was very, very fast in the first 10 yards, and that was his game. He'd be messing about on the edge of the box, the next thing he was on the byline crossing it, which Mortensen always headed in. That was his style. Yeah, he was a great player. There's no doubt about it.
All right, let's speak about great players then. So, who was your favourite player of the time, and did that change over the last few decades, or has it remained as one person?
At that time, it was always Jack Rowley, because he was the goal. I mean, he's still on the list, isn't he, of the goal scoring list. So it was always Jack Rowley, and of course, I always watched Johnny Carey, because my brother got all the autographs of all the teams and God knows what, and he was shy of getting Johnny Carey for some reason. And the man used to stand there outside Old Trafford and wait until everybody had got an autograph. And we were stood 10 yards back or whatever, and he wouldn't go, so I got it off him, and I was only 8 or whatever. And when he was just going to walk away, and he was, what I remember about him, though, he had a trilby on with a pipe stuck in his mouth and a big white rain mac on. But he was magic. He walked back to me. Give me, I said, it's for Peter. He said, what's your name? And I said, John. So he said, it's for John. He wouldn't come, the coward. So anyway, yeah, I used to watch him all the time. Johnny Ashton as well. Because in the house we lived in Chalton Camardi, he had a brother across the road called Ted. And he used to be there pretty regular. He used to call it his brother's. So I was only a kid, but I used to see him going into the house. So that's why I know them, really. The goalkeepers used to change a bit. Compton, I remember well. But at that time, it was Alan. Bit of a lunatic.
I think all goalkeepers are. I don't think that's changed, has it?
But Compton was a good goalkeeper. I don't think they've ever been known, United, for goalkeepers, until they got Schmeichel. Stepney was good, but Schmeichel was brilliant. But other than that, Wood, he was on the borderline, but I don't think Busby worried, because he always said he'd score more goals than he'll.
Even Greg, is Greg not that good?
Greg was good, yeah, Greg was good.
But he was proper innocent. Not roofed in right, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he was good when he went up for the ball. And the ball went up the field and the man went on the floor, yeah, he was very good. But I don't think they've had fantastic goalkeepers until they got a bit of Stepney, and then the main man was Schmeichel.
That, do you think he's better than Van der Sar, better than De Gea?
Oh yeah, he was the best, yeah. Schmeichel was the best, yeah. No doubt about it. In my mind, anyway.
I said, who was your favourite player of all time now, United, who would you say?
God, it's hard, that. Very, very hard.
It's hard for me. You've got a couple more years on me as well.
No, it's very hard. Duncan Edwards is the man. A lot of people that you don't know, you never mention after years. Roger Byrne was magic. That was a magic team, actually, in the 50s. Van Nistelrooy was great.
That's didn't expect that one.
And I think it was great.
Well, he was one of the most prolific we've had.
Cantona. It's unbelievable, really, to think about a great player at United. There were some very, very good ones. At the moment, I don't think they've got a great player at this moment in time. You know, they're not showing it if you've got one. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth.
A lot of people asked us to do...
De Gea is probably the best thing we've got at the moment.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people asked us to do your favourite 11 of all time, which... I think that would take too long to do.
I could do and sit down for 3 days before that. There's no doubt about it.
I think doing a greatest 11 from Manchester United, I mean, you could do one a decade, and I don't know if you'd be able to do one overall.
Well, you could pick the team there in 56 and just say that's it, 57. In other words, the Munich lads, you could pick them.
You put them above, say, the treble side, the 2008 side, the 68 side.
Well, I think they'd have done it.
You think they'd have done the job?
I had no doubt about it. They'd have done it. It's very sad, Munich. It's not because of United only, but they lost all the England players for that year. It was a World Cup year.
Yeah, you've said this to me a few times.
I think
Brazil wouldn't have had a chance.
I don't think so. I think they'd have won the World Cup with them. 5 or 6 United players in it. Good players. Really good players. Charlton was only coming through, but he'd have played in it. Tommy Taylor. Peggy, obviously. Roger Byrne, the captain. You know, Duncan Edwards, obviously.
Coleman.
I think Coleman would have come through, he'd have been in the squad. Even Violet, I mean, Violet had played a long time then, but he was still brilliant. He was, I think he was the first Dennis Law type player that I seen anyway. So I think he'd have been there as well. You could have had five or six players from United in that England side. I think that Brazil would have had
a side that might have won everything domestically and European. Into that, it's great momentum for it. Yeah. We've seen what's happened with Barcelona when they've gone on into a European Championship on the back of stuff. Spain have murdered, haven't they? They've absolutely destroyed.
Well, that youth team came after the Munich crash straight away, obviously, and they kept it going. They got to the cup final, the FA Cup final. And they kept it going in a way. Now think them lads would have had two or three more years in the youth team before they got to that stage. Maybe more. So it was a great shame that. And might have been a lot more England players as well out of there.
We'll touch more on Munich in the Munich documentary. I'm not sure what day this is going to go up on. This might go up this weekend, this might go up after the Munich documentary. Obviously, the Munich documentary has been released or will be released on Monday, so we'll cover more of the Munich stuff in there. But one thing I want to ask you specifically about Munich is, supposedly Real Madrid offered us Di Stéfano after Munich. Now, I think English football doesn't really rate the guy at all. Did you see him when he came to Old Trafford?
Di Stéfano, yeah. Well, it's a question of who would you like to buy them days. And I would have said Di Stéfano. He'd have been brilliant at United. Playing there, Tommy Taylor. He'd been brilliant. Oh, yeah. But the trouble was, Di Stéfano wouldn't even dream of coming, I wouldn't think, then. Because we didn't have a side at all. There was no one to play with anybody. You just had to get going. Matt Busby said, it'll take me 10 years. He'd done very well because he won the Cup in 5. And 10 years he won the European Cup. He'd done what he said. But yeah, I think, I don't think top players would have thought about coming. They asked every club if they had a player for them. And they got some terrible answers, which I know about. I know Bob Lord of Burnley said, well, he shouldn't gallivant about Europe.
Fucking hell.
And that's true. But there you go. I mean, there was people didn't like, and as soon as Burnley got into the Europe, he was in it, which was just the early 60s. But mainly, we shouldn't shout a bit. That's up. People didn't think about United all over the country. Because it was Manchester United, and a lot of people hated them anyway. And they still do. There was only a few people I knew from other teams, supporters and that were generally sorry about it. But most of the country, they didn't worry that much, as Bob Lord showed. But the big thing for me, as I always say to people, that it wasn't only United. I think England got destroyed then for a long time to come. Still maybe now. Because I think they won it that year, no doubt about it. Can you imagine the man that made his name, Pelé, in Sweden, 17-year-old, he'd been up against Duncan Edwards, who was only 21, but had been playing for 4 years. And everybody knew him as the greatest player. So I don't think Brazil would have done what they did if we'd got in the final with them anyway.
Let's move off Munich, because obviously we're going to cover that in the whole Munich thing. But something that you've just mentioned there, the other clubs' sympathy to United. You've mentioned that you and your mates, group of 14, 15, of you used to actually do United and City. I always thought that was a little bit of a myth that people went to Main Road one week and Old Trafford the next, but it happened.
Oh, yeah, I know
people. Did it happen in the numbers that people sort of suggest, or was it?
No, not really. There was people like us. There was 14 of us from Ardwick Green. And half and half, say, City United. So we knew where everybody had been, would be on a Saturday. Obviously, it was alternate week. So behind the goals, scoreboard end at each ground, just the left of the goals, we'd be there, 14 of us there, Old Trafford and the Main Road, alternate weeks. And we used to have some good banter, because it was good banter then. You know, it was, you still had the Shepherd end in the 70s, say, but 50s and 60s, it was still good banter. I mean, you wouldn't get any harm done to you anyway at a football match, especially at the school board ends, and especially at United, because all the dockers were there. And it was just full of them. You know, so but you can imagine, we were stood amongst them, half City, half United. So it was good banter.
So did they cheer when United scored, the City lads, when is it Old Trafford?
Oh no.
So they're just standing there watching, just to have a crack with the lads?
To watch the game, yeah.
Was you having a drink on the terraces then? Was that allowed?
Yeah.
Bring that back. When did that change? Because clearly that didn't happen today. When did that change?
I don't know. I just don't know, really. I stopped seeing the lads because we all got married. Well, I got married when I was a baby, I think. But we all got married and moved away, and we still keep in touch, but we don't see each other now at matches, you know. We're all too old.
But that culture of watching United and City, that doesn't happen. So when do you think that happened? Roughly, was that late 60s? Was it 70s? Was it when City started to become competitive and won a title themselves? Did that sort of change the outlook?
Well, we was doing it from the 60s. I'd say we was doing it from the 60s. But, they'd go to certain matches. You know, it might be a Real Madrid match, if they could get in it.
Just to go and see the players. Obviously, you're not seeing them on Sky Sports of a week, are you?
No. Oh, no, there's no television, mate, you know. There might be replays. But, they'd go and watch a match. I've been to Main Road once to watch Tottenham. Just to watch Tottenham, because Jimmy Greaves was involved and all them people. John White. And I went there and they battered City 6-2. And he was having a great time. And I was with all the City lads, and that's the way it goes, because he'd won the double the year before. It might have been the year that they won the double, which was a big thing, wasn't it? You know, the first time, which United should have done in 56, was it? 55 or 57, anyway.
In 57, we lost the cup final, I think.
Yeah, well, we won the league. That's right, and Nat Lofthouse put Greg in the goals. Yeah, no, that was in the 58. Wood got injured, that's right. McFarlane run into him, headed him, and he had to go off, and there was no subs. Jackie Blanchflower went in goals, I think. So he lost the centre-half.
He headbutted him?
Oh, yeah, he ran about 10 yards, 20 yards. I'll never forget Duncan Edwards. He was on the floor as if he was injured. And Duncan Edwards stood there with his hand on his hips. And I thought, I hope he does, because he looked like he was going to kick him on. Oh, he'd run a long way and broke his cheekbone.
How early in the game was that?
It was in the first half.
So he played with 10 men? Or did he not go off?
He came back on in the second half because he took him out, I believe, to kick balls on the car park outside Wembley. To see it. Anyway, he came back on, but he was all right.
Broken cheekbone.
He could see double and all sorts.
Jesus.
So Jackie Blanchflower went and goes, yeah, we had 10 men really. So that was a shame. We'd have been the first double winners.
Old Trafford, it's a little bit different, I think you could say, as it was in 1950. What has changed? Is it unrecognisable from the place that
you're from? Yeah. You might as well go to Charleston as go to Old Trafford. Well, it's a lot bigger, obviously, but yeah, it's changed unbelievable, yeah.
Does it still feel like the same place though? Has it changed gradually enough that it still feels like that's the home, that's the grass that Duncan?
Oh, of course, yeah, it's still United, isn't it? It's still Old Trafford, but the stadium itself is just unbelievable. I suppose I've been around it a bit, but we was very lucky in the 60s for the World Cup. They built the first cantilever stand, and I left engineer and we went in and they put the lift in our lads. And then we went on standby every Saturday because you couldn't get out of the boxes unless you went through the stand. And so they had us standing by on the lift in case it broke down. So that in the end, there was about 8 of us up there on standby every Saturday. So if there was a box empty, they let us go in them. So,
Is that north or the south stand?
Right, facing the boxes now.
So that would be north stand? What's now the North Stand, United Road?
Yeah, North Stand, yeah. Yeah, it was just a cantilever stand with boxes in it. So we used to stand by for the lift. That's where your dad came with me first. So he's been going since 65, really.
67, I think it was, his first game.
He's lost it then. Because he came up there and I wasn't at that lift company then.
Well, the first programme that I've got for him is the last game of the season. I think it's Stoke, 1967.
No, he was there before that. He definitely was, because we went up in that, as I say, we was on standby on the lift and I'd left that company by then, by 67. So he came in, I thought he came in 65 actually. Yeah, there was no stand built when he came. Because I remember putting him on the picket fence and my brother nudged me and this guy was sat on this guy took him off and went on the fence himself. So he ran anyway, so we put him back. So he was there before the stand.
Fair enough.
About 65. Yeah.
There's a story you've told me about my dad's favourite player in that time when he was first going was Nobby Styles.
That was in the boxes. There you go.
And he didn't recognise him when
we was going up in the lift after a match, and of course everybody was up or down, whatever they wanted to be, but there was two bars at each end of the stand, and all the players used the cocktail bar at Stretford end. So we're going up in the lift, that's it, finished for us. And Folks, Styles and Bobby Charlton came in with whatever, a businessman talking to him. So I'm nudging your dad, saying, oh, Billy Folks, like, Bobby Charlton. And he just put his head down. And I said, hey, down here. Like, and he said, no, put his head down. Because he had his glasses on, his arm rims and his teeth in and everything, and a white mac on. So he gets out and they go off towards the Stretford end. And then I said, who's that? I don't know. And I said, it's Nobby Styles. Oh, he went mad, because that was his hero, Nobby Styles.
I don't know if you guys have seen it on me. He used to wear like big, like Thunderbird style.
Yeah. Oh, he loved him. And so I took him down in the end, and Billy Fox just stood outside the door talking. Of course, in the boxes then days, it was all businessmen and God knows what. So the young lads there, they would be in the sheepskin coats, and even the kids down at 6 year old and that. So me and Craig walks over, who must be 6 year old then, and he's got his bobby hat and his white red and white scarf on. And Billy Folks said, yeah, he's a football supporter here. So I said, excuse me, like, I said, he's here though. It's Nobby Styles. And he went, oh, is he? You know, obviously I said the wrong thing. I said, yeah, he came up in the lift with us and he missed him. I said, any chance of getting his autograph? And he went, oh, okay. So he opened the door. Nobby! So out he walked. Go and get everybody's autograph on that. And he was all miffed, looking at Gray. And off he went, came back with it all done. And I went, hey, that's something. And I went, oh, you better do that, Billy. I was forgetting him altogether. Billy Folks. So anyway, yeah, he didn't recognise his hero in his big glasses.
We've just mentioned, sort of, over the last couple of topics we've said there, three players that arguably don't really get spoken about enough in terms of great United players. Nobby Styles being one, obviously. One of two Englishmen to win a European Cup and a World Cup. Still called Nobby. He's not called Sir Nobby. Everybody from Jeff Hurst to Trevor Buchan's been knighted and Nobby Styles hasn't. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't think that's right. Bill Folks, Harry Gregg. Are these three players that you think, for the part they've played in Manchester United history, their standing is correct, or do you think they should be spoken about along the same lines as Charlton, Lauren Best?
There's a lot. They are, obviously. Should be spoken about more. But there is a terrible lot. You know, the great sides they had, you know, and won the European Cup, as you said. And you know, who's the European Cup team? You know what I mean? Stepney, Brennan, Dunn. Who is a Brennan and Dunn? You know,
Stepney. Great. Stepney can walk around at Old Trafford.
I know
you had a picture of him a couple of weeks ago.
I had a photograph with him, but yeah, Brennan and Dunn, no one mentions him. Yeah. And there was only one European Cup winning.
John Aston Jr.
Left winger.
Man of the match in the final, actually. In a final that did have Bobby Charlton, George Best scoring a great goal, 18-year-old John Aston Jr. Now runs a pet store in Gloucester.
Well, that was his game. That's the one he played.
That was the only thing.
I watched him at Old Trafford a few times, and he didn't make it, and that was that. But that game, he was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, but what I mean is that Stepney Brennan done in a European Cup side. And I know a lot of people that go Brennan. But by the way, he started as a left winger. And I remember him as a left winger for the youth team and that. Obviously, they say Styles, Folks, centre half, Setters, Crerans. Now, Crerans don't get talked about a lot.
I think Crerans gets a little bit more because obviously he's on MUTV.
Yeah,
I agree with that. He's in people's faces a bit more.
It's not as much, though, as sort of your Best and Lord and Charlton.
Well, your Charlton, Lord and Best, that's
them, yeah.
And we'll talk about George Best in a second, actually.
And don't forget that side that won the European Cup. There was only three players he bought, and one of them was £5,000. It's only done.
Law was another one for a British record.
No, he didn't play.
He didn't play, but one of the players that he buy was Law.
Stepney and Crerans, that was it. All the rest were used.
Crerans was Celtic, was it, that we're going from?
Only a few thousand, really. 60,000 or something like that.
I can't remember what we got Law for, but if you look at... people keep talking about what Pogba cost us in terms of revenue. Pogba was, I believe, 19% of our turnover was how much Pogba cost us. But at the time, Dennis Law cost us 54%. That would have been, Pogba being 250 million. I think we boiled a lot of him for that.
Yeah, he was...
But Robson was the same, actually. Brian Robson was the same. The million we paid for him was 50% of our
turnover. But don't forget, they were top players.
Not now.
Unbelievable. But that European Cup final, you look at the people at Sadler. Who talks about Sadler? I know we all know Kidd. Because you still see him on the touchline.
Well, how about flip it and go modern? 1999, who talks about Jesper Blomqvist?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody talks about Jesper Blomqvist. But obviously, with Keenan Scholes not starting, Nicky Butt and was it Ryan Giggs or was it Beckham? I think it was Giggs and Butt was your centre midfield. Beckham on the right, Blomqvist on the left.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about
Blomqvist. Well, you'd forget him, wouldn't you? And it's a shame, really, because he was there. And they won the biggest thing they won. But they could win.
Blomqvist probably pushed Giggs to be as good as he was that season because he never had competition when he was at United. But that season, Blomqvist was good. Not Ryan Giggs good, but he was good enough to put pressure on him. And Giggs obviously had his problems with injury. And I think he only came on in 99 semi-final in the FA Cup because Blomqvist had kept him out of the team and Giggs was coming back from injury, I think. So, yes, but Blomqvist had a real key part to play in that
season.
He's
not mentioned, really, is he? No. And as you say, there's a lot of players like that. It's fullbacks and all that. They're brilliant people. Brilliant players, else he wouldn't be in the side, especially for Busby. And yet they never get a mention.
We just spoke a little bit about... let's go back. George Best, one of the questions that we got off Reddit was, George Best, genius or wasted talent? Or combination of both?
He was a genius, there's no doubt about that. But I don't think he wasted his talent. He gave him 10 years. Which is good to what you see these days. I know he could have gone a lot more. It's just the way I know, really. I think I know why he was like that. He was very shy. So he was on the booze all the time.
Well, that's,
and it got rid of his shyness.
That's Paul McGrath's thing, isn't it? He was chronically shy. He needed two cans to go to training to speak to people in the morning.
I knew George Best in a pub.
Is that an Irish thing?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Jesus, the blarney. No, I knew him at 17 because he was living at Mrs. Fullaway's in Charlton, not far from us, and I went to school with her son. And he was 17 and he used to drink orange juice in the Oaks on Barnamore Road. And you couldn't talk to him. He was there with these lads that lived near him. I went to school with him, with these lads. And he just stood at the back drinking his orange juice. And then when he was in his 40s or whatever, I met him in the Midland Hotel after a fight I went to at GMEX. And him and Higgins was at the bar with a bottle of wine in front of him.
Jesus, they could put some booze away, couldn't they?
And I went over and said to him, I want a word with you, pal. And he says, oh, don't start in here, mate. And then he looked round at me. Higgins had moved up the bar a bit. And he looked round at me and went, and you know what? He said, it's John, isn't it? And he remembered me.
Good
hell. Honestly. It, and we had a laugh. I said, you look better in front of a orange juice instead of that thing. He said, I know that. But he'd had a bit then, so he could talk. Yes, he was a brilliant player. Unbelievable. You just couldn't believe what he could do with a football.
And on shite pitches. Because Old Trafford hadn't seen a blade of grass in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, in all sorts of pitches and balls, heavy balls and everything. But he used to try and kick him through all, and you know, they caught him and he didn't seem to catch him. He just carried on. He'd go in the dressing room afterwards with bruises all over him and cuts and everything. Well, he'd be worried about the night time, where he was going at night, wouldn't he? As long as he could walk, he'd be right.
Is he someone that you think that could translate to the modern game?
Oh, Jesus, any time. George Best, yeah.
How do you think he would have coped with like the celebrity element of football nowadays? Do you think it's obviously ten times worse?
He had it.
Is it? Do you think it would have been worse for him now?
I think it'd have been quieter for him now, because he had it when he was on his own.
Right, so he was just the focal point of it.
They're all celebrities and they're all millionaires.
So maybe he would have people he could have spoken to.
He'd have been. Now, I'm just one of the lads now. He wouldn't bother him now. I mean, half of them are piss heads anyway, aren't they now? And don't care what they do. He'd have been right. He'd have been with them. And he'd have probably played longer.
I think they probably would have maybe got him to speak to some sort of psychologist or something to try and...
Yeah.
I think they maybe would have tried to help him. Do you think that's something that Fergie may, if he was a player in Fergie's era, he could have helped him, or...?
I think he would have helped him, actually. Busby was a bit quiet himself, really, for handling someone like George. He was like his son when he was... he got away with murder, I think, anyway. But I don't think he'd have got away with as much with Busby. Like, Gigg started doing once.
Yeah, he shut that shit right down, didn't he?
And got pulled up. And I went to a sportsman's dinner in it and listened to Sharp. And it was the house Gigg's was pulled out of, wasn't it? And he told us about it. You know, there's no doubt about it. He walked in and got Gigg's out there, and...
didn't he say to Gigg's, do you want to end up like him?
Yeah.
While Sharp sat there like...
But he got up and went to walk with him, and he said, sorry, boss, and he said, you can stay where you are. And that was that. And I think that was the end of Sharp, wasn't it, really?
All right, speaking about the modern game then, it's massively over-commercialised now. There's so much wall-to-wall coverage, there's so much... like noodle sponsors, and we've got a tractor sponsor over it, and a diesel engine sponsor, like what we need that for, I don't know. Do you think the over-commercialisation of the game is a good thing fundamentally or a bad thing?
Well, it's got to be good because the money they pay out, they've got to have it. I think that's what's happened now. It's catch 22 now, where they can't do it without it. Whatever they do and whatever they say, they've got to have it, because you've got people like Pogba, and whoever, footballers, they've got this money now.
But has that changed the way the game is and was for the worst, do you think, or for the better?
It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to football. If they've got the money and they can get the players, they've got to pay it, and they can pay it, so it doesn't matter.
You don't think there's a connection lost with the fans?
No.
Really?
I don't think so. Not with commercial things, I don't think so.
No, I mean, do you not think the way the money's come into the game, surely how approachable players was in the 50s
and 60s? The only thing I think about it now, with the money they're getting, that they shouldn't be charging the things they charge to watch the match. You know, they don't need to make money off fans. They're making so much money off whoever who pays them money.
I think TV's the big one. It's the advertising on
TV. It's just unbelievable, isn't it? You know, they don't need to pay. You don't need to pay to get into a match what you pay nowadays. Yeah, I mean, if they made the top price 20 quid, it wouldn't do any good. Wouldn't do any harm to the club. And I really think that it's a terrible price to go to a match now. They have a big thing on this week about the railway prices. And it's true. Everybody's hammering the working people. working class people. But that's another thing that's political. But if they could charge less, the fans would be happier. Mm. And they can charge less.
Well, you know, there was a study from the mid-90s to, I think it was 2011 or 2012. It was 20 years. No, it was from the start of the Premier League to 2012 or 13. So that 20 years. And the average age of the fan in 92, 93 was 23. And the average age of the fan in 2012, 13 was 43. So in 20 years, the average age of the fan has gone 20 years, which means it's essentially the same people are holding season tickets. Yeah, there's no young...
They grew up with it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no young people coming to the matches. It's hard for... You know, how old was Pete when he took you?
He was 10. He was only 2 years between.
He was 10 when he took you to Old Trafford?
Yeah, no, I was 8, yeah.
I would get locked up... Jaden's 10, right? I would get locked up tomorrow if I was like, yeah, just go to the match, Jay, and take an 8-year-old with you. But, look, all right, so that's kind of nuts.
It's a different year, isn't it?
But surely it's safer now with mobile phones and stuff.
Nah.
I can ring Jaden and say, you all right? No, you was out and gone in the ether.
No. They get that pissed off them. For the start, they wouldn't have a mobile phone by the time we got to the corner. No, it was safer then. Jesus, you could walk about. I walked about Piccadilly when I was about 11 years old.
That's mental. But either way, so there was no... There's currently no culture of 12, 13, 14-year-old lads saying, let's go to a match together. That doesn't happen. For starters, you're looking at 40 quid to get in.
That's what I mean.
You're looking at 10, 15 quid in transport to get there. Whatever you want to spend on Ribena or whatever, I suppose, for 13 and 14-year-olds. So there's no culture of young fans coming to the game. I think that's where a safe standing, unallocated section, just for feral kids would be a great thing, wouldn't it? I think that's where you get atmosphere from.
Don't forget, teenagers, like I was talking about, like we used to go to the matches, 14 of us. We was all working. Because there's nowhere to work now, is there? There is no work. There's no apprenticeship.
Well, you're in school till 21, 22, aren't you?
We was working, there was apprenticeships and everything. There's no apprenticeships.
Not at 10 and 8 you wasn't, though.
No, as soon as I got to... We was working at 15, weren't we?
How much was that, do you remember? How much was... It probably doesn't say on there, does it? But how much was the match ticket?
That was 3 pence.
How much was the ticket?
Jeez, you got to change that. No. I haven't got a clue, about £5, I think, £5. 25p now, sorry.
25p, in relative to a weekly wage?
Well, look at that there, that's 3p.
The programme's 3p, so a programme now is like 4 or 5 quid, you're looking at 7, 8 times that for your match ticket, so, yeah, that probably adds about up, doesn't it? Let's call it about 25p then. So what was your weekly wage, or what was an adult's weekly wage in 50?
Jeez, it'd be about £3, £4, wouldn't it?
So it's still quite significant.
£5. Yeah, £5 would be would be a bit dear, I suppose.
Well, especially with two kids going. Now, did you pay in or jibbing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was only pennies in juniors. They called it juniors gate. And it was only pennies, yeah. I started drinking, it was a bob a pint, a shilling a pint.
5p.
So I can't, it might not have been that, you know, it might have been a shilling to get in the match. A pint, it's £3 a pint now, isn't it?
Modern fans, because I think there's a large section of support with no patience at the moment. What's your view on that as a topic of people? I mean, there was outrage last night. People dropped him, he's shit, Jose don't know what he's fucking doing, all this sort of stuff. What's your view on the attitude of a lot of modern fans to patience? And you think that's a bad thing of the game nowadays?
They've got to realise, in a way, about Mourinho, anyway, in what he's took over. He's took over a disjointed club last year. 2 years, Van Gaal, and he didn't get it. Obviously, he didn't get it right. And the few months that Moyes was there, you know, that was bad. It was a shame that, you know, he had his own idea and he changed the team from a team that had just won the championship. It was just ridiculous. And he should have just kept the team and then worked his own things in afterwards. Anyway, but Mourinho has got to be given time now because he came after 3 years nearly of crap.
Just
It's another thing, but I think it ruined Rooney.
But those 3 years?
Of course it did. He stopped him playing where he wants to play. And he put him on the wings, and he's like an attacking midfielder. Mm. That's not him. It was only a few years ago. He scored 35 goals in a season, and then they came.
But this is a topic that we talk about a lot on this podcast, and we've had the conversation, and I don't even want to ask this on camera because I'm going to get rinsed for asking you, because I don't think Wayne Rooney is a Manchester United legend, because I don't think he ever had that connection with the fans. Ruin me. Just go on, ruin me. Because you do, don't you?
He's got to be.
Okay, well.
What is it, nearly 11 years? It's 11 years now.
Nearly 13, actually.
Right, so... He's broke the United record. He's broke the England record.
It's not a statistical thing. Is it not a feeling about who should be a club legend? Do you ever see him getting a statue? Because I think that should be the barometer. If you're worthy of a statue, then I think you can be called a legend. I don't like saying legend. That guy's a legend.
The trio, it was a long time before that was put up.
But don't you think Giggs, Scholes, Cantona, Robbo, all of them need a statue before Rooney gets one? Do you not think?
Oh, I don't think anyone should have a good statue.
Well, there you go.
I only think Best Loudon Challenge should have a statue. That's my year.
I used to say there's only one legend at United. That's how tight I put that pinnacle. I don't think you should have 97 legends. So I used to say Bobby Charlton's the only United legend.
He was always ours, mine and my brother's. That was him, Bobby Charlton.
So Rooney's a legend for you.
I've had to fight for my brother in the pub because he's been arguing about Charlton that hard. It's true that. Yeah, we always Charlton was ours. There's no doubt about that. Law was a great footballer, but he was like, he was a bit fly by night. Anyway, he'd go where he wanted. He even gave his notice in, didn't he? Once, and when Busby said, "Well, let him go," he rescinded it straight away.
So. Why has Law got two statues, actually? The only player with two statues, he's got his one in the Stretford End and the one at the Trinity. And, well, actually, I'll come on to the City thing in a minute because I already know the answer to it, but I'd like you to explain to everyone else. So Law actually put his notice in prior to actually leaving. Revered as a legend at the club.
Yeah, He asked for more money once. And he was away.
So there's parallels with Rooney there?
Well, yeah, maybe. But this was Dennis Law, wasn't it? You know, you're a legend. Busby was away or something, and we asked Jimmy Murphy to tell him that we need more money, I was on my way. And he phoned him and he says, "Don't tell me I was away." Put a phone.
Love it.
And he was Jack the Lad then. And he rescinded, and that was that. And that was the end of that.
When Dennis Law went to City, because I've seen a lot of people say Dennis Law went to City, therefore shouldn't be considered a legend. What I've been led to believe is different time. It's not like he's got 30 million in the bank. He still needed to play. He lived in Manchester. And actually, it was the club that got rid of him when he went to City rather than he went to City. Is that right?
Could be. It could be, yeah. I think he was on his way down, really. So I don't think they cared anyway.
And he didn't relegate United, did he?
Eh?
He didn't relegate United.
No, they relegated themselves that year.
Right, thank you, because that's the biggest myth. Apart from that, Manchester's full of City fans.
I know, he scored that goal when he back-heeled it. But that was already done and dusted. But you have a season to do that.
Yeah,
it takes you a season to get relegated or win the Championship.
All right, there's some more that I want to get into. One, the 26 years without a title from 67 to 93. Did you ever think we'd win a league again? Watching Liverpool, clean up European Cups, clean up titles... Did you ever believe that Fergie was the guy coming in that was going to change?
Well, going before that, in that blank years, I'm a bit behind with all. Not behind, I don't know about it because, I had five kids and from the 60s. We had four by the 70s. Five, sorry. And I worked away. I went chasing money. So all I knew about United, I read in the papers. I thought they had good chances, especially the Sexton when he was there in 1988. What a brilliant team.
We just pulled it out, didn't we, we've got
Martin Buchan. And
this is August 80, so this might have been the first game of the season for Middlesbrough.
That's it.
So this is the team here. So we'll go through it. I mean, Gary Bailey, Jimmy Nicol, Arthur Alberston, who's one of the top all-time appearances for United, Sammy Mack, Kevin Moran, Martin Buchan, Steve Coppell, Jimmy Greenough, Joe Jordan, Lou Macari, and Mickey Thomas. I mean, that reads like a who's who, doesn't it?
That could be a championship side. And, you know, at times I could look at it and maybe even go to a match.
Wasn't it the following season Brian Robson was added to that as well?
Yeah, yeah. Robson came in. Didn't he... this was...
I mean, we've got one here from 78. This one's also got McQueen, Coppell,
Sexton
Jordan.
Was there then.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't... He wasn't there when Robson came, I don't think. But anyway, that is a good side. There's no doubt about it in 80, 81. And you could say, well, Jesus, they could win a championship. Who else was here around about 81?
Throw this one at you.
Liverpool, I'm sorry.
So this is United-Liverpool, February 83. Think they won a European Cup this year?
Yeah.
So you look at the lineups there. Their team, you've got Grobbelaar, Neil, Kennedy, Lawrenson, Whelan, Hansen, Dalglish, Lee, Rush, Hodgson, Souness. That's a hell of a side, isn't it? Fair play.
Side, yeah.
And then United's own, Bailey, Duxbury, Alberston, Remy Moses, Kevin Moran, Gordon McQueen, Robbo, Arnold Murren, Stapleton, Whiteside, Coppell. There's not much difference.
Two good sides, actually. But that was a great side for Liverpool, there's no doubt about it.
Did you ever feel we were winning the championship again, though?
Well, they have to change. You know, we all thought that. You know, they did have to change from that time of... you know, we always thought when Doherty came, Tommy Doherty. But of course, his brains fell below his belly button, and that was that. But yeah, he was a good manager, and we thought we had got high hopes with him. But when this came now, and Sexton didn't make it, we thought that's it for a while anyway.
Big run, hope there. Well, he went unbeaten 10 games.
I think it was Ron that got Robson, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
So Sexton had gone then. It was a chance anyway, wasn't it? You know, no one thought of anything about Fergie, really, although he'd done great with Aberdeen to beat the big two in Scotland. And then he went on that little trip for 4 or 5 years here at Jesus, and we thought, that's it. And then it was funny, he'd been here about 5 years, or 4 or 5 years, and I went to a sportsman's dinner in Ashton and Masonic, and he was the speaker. And you can imagine it. Well, all our mates are there, so it was half City and half United. And they give him hell. And he didn't bat an eyelid, you know.
Can you even imagine a current Manchester United manager doing a sportsman's dinner in Ashton? Like George and Jose Mourinho just turning up at the old ball.
Yeah. Oh, well, he did, yeah. But they give him hell. And he spoke well enough and whatever, what you could hear of him. And he said in the end, I'll tell you, give me 1 or 2 years now, and we'll be right. And they won the cup the next year, and then won the European Cup Winners' Cup. But I heard a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, that he went into Busby and said, that's me, innit, you know. And he said, why, what's the matter? He said, have you seen the papers? This is before all that, like, obviously. And he said, you don't read the papers here. Get out of it, get on with it. And that was the end of it.
I interviewed Robbo a couple of years ago, and I asked him that question, like, how close was Fergie coming to the sack? And Robbo goes, well, I always wanted to know myself. He goes, so I collared Martin Edwards one day, and I was like, tell me the fucking truth. He said, how close was you at sacking him? And Edwards said, hand on heart, we wasn't going to sack him, it was paper talk. He said, we could see what was going on behind the scenes with the scouting overhaul and what was going on with the youth players. He goes, and we was happy.
That was a big thing, you know. Don't forget them players we knew as the 92 and all that shit.
Well,
this
I'll bring up another programme. We've got the 92 FA Youth Cup final programme here.
Well, that's what he was doing.
Yep.
When we were talking, or when them lads are giving him hell in Ashton, that was happening.
Oh, yeah, he knows he's got gigs, and he's got scores, he's got Beckham, he's got a ball.
I mean, gigs have started playing, hasn't he? 92.
91, he was, yeah.
So he started playing. And... before he won anything. So it must have been around about the time he was at that dinner. But he must have known all about that. He had Beckham down in the U team, like Scholes, Nevilles.
Oh, Gary Neville's got a great story, I think, of when he made his debut at 17. I think it was Torpedo Moscow, I think. And he's a great story. He goes, this is how meticulous Fergie was. He goes, Gary Neville's got known for a bit of a throw on him, hasn't he? Mm. He said he makes his debut. Gary Neville throws a ball. He throws it into the box. No one gets on the end of it. He goes, we go into the dressing room afterwards and he goes, fucking Pallister. He goes, you're a fucking wanker. And he's like, what? What? And he goes, do you not watch the youth team? He goes, do you not know this lad's got a long throw on him? Yeah. He's like, fucking get down there and watch him in future. And he goes, Gary Neville's sitting next to Pallister like, oh shit, I'm getting him bollocks. But the catalyst for what went on to happen, I've got to ask you about him, because to me, Eric Cantona is Manchester United. He is that romantic thing that I think of and why I probably fell in love with United. Where does he stack up in the all-time greats for you?
He's up there. And the only reason he's not up there is because he wasn't here long enough.
But he walked away at 31. And he had years left in him, didn't he?
That was up to him, but that doesn't matter, does it? You know, you've got to look at what you're talking about with Rooney.
Yeah, he's 31, but I don't think Rooney has got years in
him. Yeah, but he's how many years now? 13, is it? 12 or 13 yeah. years. Yeah. So he wasn't here long enough. He was a great player. There's no doubt about that. And if I hadn't said that Catherine would kill me.
That's my auntie.
That's my daughter. Yeah, she got photographs of him all over the house. But yeah, he was a great player. And he done a lot for United. There's no doubt about that. The best thing I ever seen was that goal against Liverpool.
Yeah, FA Cup final.
And he hit it about this high, didn't he? He had to hook his leg. And it went 2-0, had to move, else and a band balls.
For that game, Catherine said, we're going to win 1-0 and Cantona's going to score in the 85th minute. And that is exactly how it went down. And that was spooky. That was one of the spookiest ones.
But the lads have got to think about this. I was watching it and the television had put, this was after the match, but it was the next week or something. And they put a camera in Liverpool and in Manchester, private, where people's watching the match. And I think if any of the Liverpool lads remember this, they'll have to laugh themselves, because this was in a house in Whitefield, in Manchester, the Manchester one, and it was in a pub in Liverpool. So, of course, they swap in between the two. This is after the match anyway, it was all filmed. And they're at Liverpool, like, and they're giving it rice and all the crap. And he put that goal in. And, of course, the house in Whitefield, they just jumped about like lunatics. And they go back to the pub in Liverpool and put the goal in again. And they go back on this player, and on this spectator, and he was looking at it, and he says, that bastard should be in prison. You can imagine how quiet the pub was. And that's all he said, he should be in prison. I think he meant he should be still in prison from that lad he kicked.
Right, let's finish it on really good, and I've really enjoyed this. Hope you guys have enjoyed this as well. What is your happiest memory of Old Trafford or of Manchester United?
European Cup.
Which one?
68, obviously.
68.
Yeah.
Because of the weight of feeling of everything around it.
Well, Busby asked for 10 years. Well, he didn't have to ask for anything, did he? But he said, give me 10 years and I'll get back there. The big thing was the FA Cup in 63, obviously. The only way in this world you'd think they'd win the European Cup then, you know. Especially after Munich, anyway. And they won it, and that was it. That was the biggest thing. That can't be any bigger, can it? 10 years after the crash, you wipe the team out. Wipe the club out, innit?
And, how close do you think we... You know what, no, I'll ask you that in the Munich one. But yeah, let's leave it on that. Best moment, 68 World Cup. What was Manchester like then?
Very quiet outside. Because I came back, I was working in town, and I watched the first half in this pub. I whipped in and watched the first half. And then as soon as he blew the whistle for the first half, I got in my car and drove home from a pub.
No comment.
And I got home in 10 minutes. The draws from Piccadilly, well, just over Piccadilly. There was nothing on the road. Unbelievable. Nothing at all. I don't know why the City fans weren't on the road line, but there you go, they wasn't.
Was there a parade?
Oh, yeah.
Big one?
Yeah, town hall, yeah. Oh yeah, Town Hall steps, yeah. Magic, yeah. Oh, funny enough, I remember my first one, and I was on my dad's shoulders on Hyde Road near the Apollo, 1948 team.
But before you'd gone to a game?
Before I got, oh yeah. When my dad took me to, we only lived off at Hyde Road, and he took me around the corner, and there was all there, packed, so he just put me on his shoulders, and he couldn't see anyway, because he was like your dad.
Little.
And yeah, and he picked me up on his shoulders and we watched him. He was only 3 years out of a Jap camp then, my dad. 1948, yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's my first memory. Funny enough, eights again, 68 and 48. And 208.
Well, unfortunately, 58.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not so happy memories. But anyway, thank you. That was fucking awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Me hope you guys boy. Enjoyed that. Any questions you've got, stick them in the comments. Any comments that you've got, stick it in the comments. Thanks for watching. Please subscribe. And we'll be doing more, you know, offline podcasts like this in the future. Laters.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.